Welcome, everyone, to Taking Stock. It's October 30th, so happy early Halloween. And we've got a exciting topic, maybe a spooky topic, but certainly a fascinating one today, where we're going to be diving into the recent white paper and study release from the DTCC detailing digital assets. And this was a pretty fascinating recent drop from them just about 2 weeks ago that goes into quite a bit of detail about their perception of their experiments they've run, the studies they've run about distributed ledger technology, and they've collaborated with some other world markets. And we're going to be taking a deep dive here because they do go into some great detail about a lot of the perceived pros of this technology from their perspective, and I'm excited to dive into it. And John, thanks so much for taking this dive with me today. Welcome.
Oh, of course, Chives. What were the biggest standouts you saw throughout the study?
Boy, I mean, I think overall, before we kind of get into the top down of it, I think it was just an extremely positive read. As someone who's a blockchain technology enthusiast and who has thought for years that it would be a incredible boon for the overall efficiency of the market. And this is just one of many applications for the technology, but it's a huge application. It was good to see from such a source on high the detailed assessment that we're going to get into more detail about soon. Now, all that being said, I think that there's some shortcomings that we could talk about as well when we get there. But unless you have any bird's eye concepts that you want to touch on first, I was thinking we can. I have an intro in mind for the listing, and I'll go ahead and post. By the way, anyone listening, I'll be posting shortly in the nest here a link to the study, and also, of course, it'll be in the show notes for any future listeners if you want to check it out.
Always so planned on these episodes, Chives, and such stellar preparation. How do you normally approach? We're now sort of working on getting the shows a little more organized on GitHub. Are you using that as a place to kind of ideate and document some of the things that maybe come up to go into the nest for some of these episodes?
Well, hey, that's a well noticed, John. And yeah, you're absolutely right. I suppose before we dive in, we could mention that we've done some great work, especially you, John, have done some great work expanding and homogenizing the approach when it comes to these episodes. And so already, if you were a live listener and didn't want to wait for me to post in the nest, you'd be able to find a whole bunch of source information and a summary of the episode, at least the episode plan, posted over in the Taking Stock section of the GitHub, which is already ready for review if you want to read ahead a little bit, if that's your preference.
Well, a lot, most effort on your part. I know Bob contributed to that and put some ideas in, and I'd be remiss not to mention James, who's moving a lot of the stuff that's currently centralized onto the GitHub itself. So it's exciting to see that, and also a good place if you can't make it live or if you don't want to come up on voice. If you have questions, posting or start a chat on what you want to hear about, just another avenue to directly reach the community.
Absolutely. So, John, did you want to cover any kind of bird's eye concepts of the document before we kind of I was thinking we could read their introduction. I think it's a good one. And maybe talk a bit about the author. But before that, anything you had foremost in mind?
Yeah, go right ahead, Chais. I think it is a pivotal topic on how these markets develop. And it was something that I really tried to harp on with that last interview with Ankit, who we had on recently. Is this an institutional market or is this a market designed for actual investors? And that was something that that really stood out as I read some of the things, and I'm sure you saw some of the challenges that they had. So I'm all for your flow. As I said, you are the master of the taking stocks.
Look, it's a collaborative community effort, like anything else. But here we'll dive right into it. As far as the anyone who's reading along on that white paper, you'll see. Just from the jump, I'm just going to look at that first paragraph. They say digital asset technology is set to have a transformational effect on financial markets, bringing new efficiencies, business models, and liquidity opportunities to the ecosystem. It gives us the opportunity to reshape the entire value chain, from primary market issuance to post-trade activities like custody and asset servicing. Institutional demand for tokenization of real-world financial assets is growing, and its impact on capital markets could be similar to the impact the internet had on information exchange. This technology promises to revolutionize how we approach capital markets, unlocking new value and streamlining process across the industry, end quote. And I really thought that was a terrific overview of the potential. And, you know, although they don't talk about here, you know, the structure that it will take, but really focus more on the potential of the technology in a broad sense, which, I mean, there's no word here that I disagree with in terms of the severity of the impact that we're talking about when it comes to this new technology. But what do you think, John?
Yes, if you, it, so firstly, that, yeah. Well, if you read, you know, it gets from best to worst is how I've seen some of these publicity stunts they do. And when I say that, I say it with every good intention, but with also a fundamental understanding that they are very good at writing very nice things that appeal to policymakers, that appeal to investors. And then if you look at the actual nuts and bolts and specifically that market structure that you mentioned, and you think about the long-term implications, I mean, even the author here, you know, has some slight notes that say, wow, this, you know, kind of puts us out of business. I remember in 3 years ago, in 2021, I was talking to a C-suite at DTCC, and they always bring up these publicity things that they do. And at the time, the big thing they were harping on is this big commitment to blockchain with Project Ion and Project Whitney. And they have similar white paper case studies with all this grand, I don't want to say it's politicking, but it's certainly like, you know, these grand words that make it sound really great to the industry. But then you look at what they're doing, and the biggest thing that they've done in the past 5 years is migrate from using a 45-year-old database technology to using a 25-year-old database technology. And you know, these for instance, with this particular executive who I had an extensive discussion with, didn't seem to really understand the implications. I mean, certainly understood their part of the business, but just wasn't that side of things. So I talked to the engineers, and they certainly understand that these things are just, they're completely separate market structure ideas. And what you see in these, in the first two white papers, the Whitney and the Ion, is this whole holistic vision, similar to this document. They're posing this whole scope of what a whole new market could look like. But then, you know, you sit down, you think about their business model, you think about their power structure, you think about their custody in particular, which comes directly into play in this one. And it doesn't go anywhere. These two, they've laid by the wayside since the boom, since crypto was so popular. They said, oh, we have to do these things. And even if you look historically, they were talking about blockchain in 2014. You think if they were going to do something with blockchain, they would have done it by now? The quandary for me is that when they talk about, you can see this conference they have, it's public on YouTube, of everything that they started learning about and publicly discussing in the industry in 2014 about blockchain. And it's very apparent going through these concepts that it disintermediates and removes the need for the as central intermediaries. And it's the same thing across all these publications. You know, this idea that we're going to have smart contracts. Well, wait a minute. Now that's the entire business that you're in is a piece of code on a blockchain. And that's a big thing that always pops out to me because I followed up with this particular C-suite over time. And I just get stonewalled. I get blackballed. And that's what happened to me every time I reach out to major participants in the industry. You get the first couple of points of contact, and then they understand, well, wait a minute, this kind of threatens our business model, and it's just stonewall, ignore. And it's really unfortunate. But, I mean, you know, these are for-profit companies with shareholders, with their own interests, to try to protect their own livelihoods. And I get that, but I think there's a real question that we need to ask, which is, are we building markets to benefit the 1%, or are we building them to serve investors and issuers and regulators?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely drawing at a key ideological context and framing that we should be keeping in mind whenever we're evaluating the language that is being used by these huge organizations. And, you know, DTCC, which is, I guess as a reminder for anyone that might have forgotten, you know, they're what we'd call like a self-regulating organization. They're essentially a body separate from any elected or appointed regulatory agency, but which still has quite a lot of power regarding how to the ongoing financial ecosystem operates. And it, you know, they use more flowery language than self-regulating. I think, let's see if I can find it quickly in the document here. They say in their about section, they say, quote, that they're industry owned and governed and innovate purposefully. And that they simplify the complexities of clearing, settlement, transaction processing, and data services, which that's all true, certainly, but they do it, it's as it said, it's industry owned and governed, meaning, you know, the body politic is not, you know, the distributed worldwide collective of investors or even a step beyond that, you know, any representations of the companies or livelihoods trading therein, but rather, you know, the broker dealers and asset managers, which are at the very top of the chain. And so, yeah, I think, John, maybe this is cart before horse, but I think on the other hand, I'm glad that you expanded on this right at the front, because although that first paragraph does sound rosy, positive, and, kind of a good approach, this is ultimately in the context and limited by the body which is funding it and organizing it. So, and we will get into more of that detail as we read on. But, you know, it's an interesting thing where they can use these different languages. Like, for example, later in this introduction, they mention how, digital asset initiatives, they need an ecosystem of participants to succeed. And they recognize, you know, the difference is that they say here, quote, the strength of U.S. markets is that we have one post-trade provider. And what's a different way to say that? That you have a central securities depository. And which is, you know, that is the custodial issue at the very core of what we work on every day. And they're right, again, I think, that is in many ways a strength of the markets if you're coming from the perspective of, you know, is liquidity the same thing as efficiency? Right? Is access to liquidity more important than a reliable settlement? These are broad questions that, depending on your answer, you might think that the sacrifices made by the CSD system, which we have today, are well worth it. And that could very well be the perspective of the author of this white paper, who I just want to touch on briefly. Her name is Nadine Shakar, and she's had a pretty incredible history. You know, currently, she's the global head of DTCC Digital Assets, which is why she's the authoring here. But that's only a very recent role. Last year, she was the CEO of Securrency, which was...
Chive, she cut out on my end.
Can you hear me okay?
Yep, that's good.
So Nadine Shakar, before she was the global head of DTCC Digital Assets, she was CEO over at Securrency, which was an RWA tokenization firm, which was later acquired by DTCC. And before that, she was the head of State Street Digital, which is, of course, the focused division of the State Street asset management firm on this technology. So this is an industry veteran, absolutely, and someone who's always been on the side of these larger players. So I'm curious, John, you know, of course, it being published through DTCC paints a very specific kind of a picture. You know, we have to view all this with a certain lens. And how does Nadine's history impact your read of that lens at all? And I'm curious to know also your thoughts about her history with Securrency and how that rolls into this as well.
Sure. So at the start of what you were talking about, you mentioned that DTC itself admits that it is the sole provider of trading, clearing, settlement, all the good things. And indeed, we saw at the end of last year put into law, it's so interesting reading these laws that literally name corporations. In the instance of the SIPs, you can look at the law and it says this is the company you have to pay money to in the case of the information processors. And indeed, we saw that again at the end of last year when the government and when the SEC mandated that every single government security, treasury securities, clears through the DTCC, which gives them a legal monopoly over an industry. and it's in the context of them as a legal monopoly, and they've been a de facto monopoly for at least two decades, if not more. I mean, they bought every single other clearing and settlement firm because of that forced standardization in 1975, which was supposed to promote competition. But of course, Wall Street has its own interests, and indeed, it has the interests of its members. And when you have the first securities trading and settlement agency, which has the support of the NYSE, and indeed originally spun out of the NYSE, which at the time and for 20 years after was the monopoly of the transacting markets. Certainly, I think that ethos of it was the only place you could do trades for the longest time on the NYSE. And now we have here the only place that you can clear and settle trades at the DTCC. And it's in that light that I want to bring up the context of their present head of digital assets being Nadine, because Nadine was brought into Securrency just about a little over a year before it was acquired by DTCC. And in the context of that acquisition, it was a very secretive process. There were like five press releases when it happened. They tried to keep it all under the radar, put out the very, very minimum amount of information they could on it by all of my interpretations of public media. And I want everyone to understand that this was DTCC. Previously, they were buying up every other clearing and settlement agency until they became a monopoly. And that was in the 80s. That was in the 90s. This acquisition was their first acquisition in 10 years. And that becomes very interesting to me if you look at what Securrency was doing, specifically in the context of its formative 5 years led by Daniel Donney, who was the founding CEO and indeed still the CTO of digital assets, working as the leads of the technology behind everything that we're looking at here, whereas Nadine is more the front, the face. And I think that I don't mean front in a mean way, but that is very much the way that I see what has happened here, because it is my interpretation of extremely limited interactions with Daniel that Nadine was brought in when Securrency as a for-profit corporation, which was invested in by sovereign wealth funds and a large number of very big Wall Street names to create custodial financial solutions, was in the process, in my interpretation, of being acquired by DTCC, and they started entering that negotiation process, and they wanted to, you know, sell the company and make a ton of money, which is what happened. When I look at some of the original interviews from Daniel, some of the public appearances, it is very clear to me that this is someone who really wants to have the best of both worlds, who wants to combine and make these markets exceptional. And yet, when they brought in that new State Street head of custody, all of a sudden, it went from doing innovation, it went from doing open contributions. You can look at Securrency before and after that new CEO, before and after the demotion, so to speak, of Daniel. Before, they were publishing open source contributions to the Stellar Network. They created a standard for clawing back assets, which is a requisite for public company stock transfer services. It enables stock splits. It enables proper oversight. It enables public policy restrictions and everything that you want in an efficient system. They gave that to the Stellar Network in an open source, free to use, open contribution standard. They created, published, and licensed freely a smart contract platform for the cross-chain trading and the custody of digital assets, very similar to the T-Rex standard that is now so common under 3683, I forget the Ethereum ones, I'm not too connected with the ecosystem there. And they did it years before anybody else. They did it immediately after. I mean, it was very quickly after the initial bull run of 2017 that got so many, myself included, into the industry. And in every sense of the word, they were poised to start building out this second rail. They were poised to begin a new financial system based not on these central intermediaries, but on a distributed blockchain network. And that was the profit motive, I believe. It was the spectrum of institutional investors, I believe. And indeed, it was the mistaken, in my view, that Daniel has shared that there has to be this, there has to be an intermediated custody central gatekeeping process that involves a very permissioned and CSD-like structure, CCP-like structure that led them to bring in this new CEO, which then very clearly stepped them up for being acquired by UTC, which is a shame because Daniels is a really smart guy and he has done talks to government agencies about how to make their operations more efficient using Agile and how the bureaucracy, I've got direct quotes from him in the TAR comment, talking to government agencies about how empowering bureaucracies to, you know, make it harder and harder to build things and publish in an open way is a bad thing. He says in one interview that this is what I fight for on a daily basis against the bureaucracy. It loves a plan. The bureaucracy believes we've got to stick to it. Being systematically able to adapt is where you become innovative, and that's where we become efficient. And that quote is sourced on him, and that was before Nadine came in. It's my perspective that Danielle really stopped being the active leader of the corporation after that, and it really did become about now being something that we can exit, we can sell to the industry, and indeed we can walk away and take our profit from, which I think is exactly what happened. And that's exactly the viewpoint that we now have here. We have very professional custody people that don't want you to own your own shares, that don't want it in your own name. I did a post yesterday on X where it was a crypto derivatives exchange and they've introduced now central custody fees in the magnitude of thousands of a Bitcoin, hundreds. I mean, it's quite a very material amount of funds. Just to hold it. And it has very clearly, I've seen, turned from something that originally inspired nonprofit collaboration, originally invoked the open source ethos of blockchain, and originally promised a system for anyone anywhere to acquire through a regulated environment, a quality basket of investment securities, into now becoming a political tool for DTCC to say, oh, we are invading, we're competing, we're not a monopoly, nobody look at us, nobody understand exactly what our business is or put any scrutiny on it whatsoever because we're working with the industry and trying to make things better for everyone and not just further our own interests and particularly further the interest of a select few on Wall Street. Does that make sense, Chives?
Well, it's as a hypothetical explanation for why this person would, you know, why Nadine might have transferred over. And I guess just for some more context for anyone who, you know, is thinking about this and wondering, you know, about State Street, you know, they are not only one of the largest banks in the U.S., but they're one of the largest asset management companies in the world. They're the largest custodious bank in the world, and they're essentially one of the big three asset managers that dominate corporate America. So you probably know the name BlackRock, you probably know the name Vanguard, and State Street is, you know, smaller than those two, but right there in the same conversation. So it's not as though Nadine would have been a stranger to DTCC or perhaps to this process, considering again that DTCC is governed by its members, is an operating body to further propagate a positive market environment for its members. And so, you know, it, of course, everything that you said there is theoretical, but I think it's grounded in rationality, considering the context of the timeline, the associations that these people have. And, so again, I mean, I think that it's just helpful for everyone to remember and to that just because someone is investigating a technology, which at its core can revolutionize custody and can provide so much more freedom and accessibility to regular individuals that are participating, that does not necessarily mean that they have a value alignment in the same way. And so that's, I think, where if we wrap back to the beginning of the conversation, you know, I was mentioning how this report is written very positively, and they talk about the incredible achievements that come from their, you know, proof of concept experiments that they ran alongside the Japan securities you know, a central, what's the, you know, essentially the Japan's version of the DTC. And, you know, they say clearly that, you know, digital assets can enhance speed, transparency, efficiency, improve risk management, you know, automate using smart contracts, you know, margin calls or haircuts, all these different things which take a lot of manpower. But of course, they're going to be happy about all these things, right? Because that this doesn't mean that it's going to be any cheaper or more accessible or provide more custodial freedoms to end users. This all increases the profit for the top end. And we don't know what level of publicity a hypothetical blockchain that is being utilized for the so delivering these different improvements is going to have.
Yeah, I love the sentiments there, Chives, and very important context you have there on State Street. It is challenging for me to describe without pictures, but you are 100% on with them being the first and largest custody of securities in the world. And that chain of, you know, use the broker quite often is the third on the chain of custodians, with these larger securities custodians intermediating on the DTCC side, especially with settling banks actually moves the money. And that is something that is so huge that and not particularly well known, because it puts so much risk on these central intermediaries. And this frightens me, because if you look at, and I shared this particular image in the Discord, if you look at file number S72520, there's a comment from Securrency, which is a pitch deck, which sort of puts out their vision for what our markets should look like. And you can see very clearly that their objective at that point in time was no longer self-custody, true ownership of securities. And instead, it's the State Street model, where, and it's the CCP model, where everything is held in this central custodian. And anytime you do anything on chain, you've got to go back to this central ledger that gets held at DTCC, that gets updated in their internal database. And indeed, only then can you have validated outside transfers, only up to the central point, which becomes something that just perpetuates the existing system of intermediation that doesn't actually solve any of the custody problems for anybody that's trapped right now in Wall Street. And I think this came out very explicitly in this particular report on page 5, when they discuss some of the technologies that use, and myself looking into these a bit further, you can see very clearly that what they've done is they've taken, and this comes down to what your definition of blockchain is, they've taken open source Ethereum libraries and institutionalized them, brought them internal to DTC's own systems, and now they are proprietarily building on them so that they will operate precisely like the private database that already exists for maintaining these records. It will not be subject to an ounce of public scrutiny or oversight. And indeed, if we agree and can follow the systems and methods of the OCC, which is another SRO, it's another systemically important financial market utility, exact same setup as DTCC, those operations, that technology is indeed, as you said, core, internalized, and subject only to the increased profits of the DTC. Remember, that last C is a corporation, subject to the poor profits of the corporation. There's a really good quote from the original founder, who, as we know, was ex-CIA and such. He said that, and this is not an exact quote, I don't have the book in front of me, he said that trust is the middle name of the DTCC. It's a depository trust company. And without trust, you have nothing. And you look at what they're doing here, they are just taking what the Web3 industry has created. They are secretizing it because the software licenses around these particular packages allow you to make proprietary changes and not share it back with the community. And indeed, they are centralizing even further the extreme risk inherent in the CCP model, which, as I've said, I believe it's insolvent.
Yeah, I think this is probably a crucial thing to touch on, and I'm glad you highlighted it. That's exactly the what I was looking to highlight when I said that these are not going to be public read and write blockchains. And I suppose you're right, it does come down to your definition of blockchain. For me, and maybe we have a quick aside about this, but I think of a blockchain more as just a way of organizing, you know, changes in data over time, and to being able to distribute that, you know, it's kind of defined by its node system. But just because you organize data in that way doesn't mean that you need to have open access to again, to read as in public scrutiny, or to write as in public confirmation of trades or changes in data in order to organize data in that way. So exactly, as you mentioned, they could utilize the technology which they have, you know, the open source technology built by the distributed worldwide interest of individuals that are passionate about DLT, and completely co-opt it for their own means so that they can realize those different efficiencies, you know, in when it comes to the speed, transparency, efficiency, you know, that all of that is from an internal perspective. And so what that, I suppose, translates to is, from an end user perspective, things might happen a little faster, but from inside the system, they're not going to need quite so many, much manual oversight. They're not going to need, a disconnected service of computer networks maintained by different participants. Each participant can, you know, participate in this shared ecosystem, but that again doesn't mean anything for your retail investors or other market participants who are much smaller fish.
No, and why would they? You know, they have all the money, they have all the power, they have all the infrastructure. There is not an ounce of funding for this kind of product that doesn't get sucked into DTCC. And indeed, they have every single legal protection over the course of drafting all these laws over the past 50 and 60 plus years. And so, you know, why would they possibly do something that could in any way threaten their antiquated systems?
Well, sure. That's absolutely right. And again, you know, this is a privately operating, self-governed collective of market participants, legacy market participants, which rely as far as their bottom line goes, as far as their whole modus operandi goes, on the propagation of the system operating as it does. So sure, we shouldn't expect them to innovate in a way that would not that would go against the grain of that established hierarchy that they've worked so hard for over the last 50 years. Now, all that being said, I think it's still fascinating and in some ways disconcerting, I suppose, that they are clearly looking to take, I guess this is a separate question, but I might say they're clearly looking to take forward steps. But you had mentioned, John, that they've been posturing in this direction towards distributed ledger technology for some years already. Do you view these recent developments with, for example, the DTCC launchpad for digital assets, which is also in part covered in this report, do you view this as actually preparing to meaningfully take next steps, or is this just more feed for people that are curious about how the industry is approaching new technologies? Because I guess one thing that I might add just before you answer is that there are advantages to them remaining on the legacy technologies as well. That helps obfuscate for regulators, or if they were to be audited in some way. Hypothetically, if there were, that's activity that isn't in the best interest of the market, .. You know, using it.
I think it cut out again, Chives.
Sorry about that. I'm going to say is that, introducing this blockchain technology does have negatives if they are, if they were to be audited and there were to be some kind of deficiency found. So do you think that they're serious about trying to implement this stuff as we're describing?
Yeah. So I'm with you there, Chives. For a little bit of background, there has been for decades now this ongoing battle between actual innovators in the space that are really trying to provide real services directly to issuers and investors that started with a SRO filing in 2006. And there's a particularly good comment from Continental that sums up a lot of those. It's 2006-16, and it's got some amendments there from Trinbath. And ultimately, this is fodder. They're running right now centralized database servers, and very clearly it is obfuscated from the regulators, from the investors, to think that the best data we have has been forced out through FOIA. We get it on a two-week delayed basis, and it is questionably accurate in some instances. What they have done with these proprietary systems, and in my view, what Wall Street itself has done over the years, building, I mean, you're trying to figure out how to screw over the everyday investor to make a profit every single day. And if that infrastructure gets public, if the system of how they skim your orders and pay rebates and or kickbacks and accept all these transaction fees and how the shares keep getting lent over and over and over again to a select few intermediaries. And I mean, you can go back, and certainly everyone in our community has seen, for instance, that event at a major brokerage firm where you press F2 on a keyboard and it generates new shares available to lend. I mean, what is happening on Wall Street is complete blasphemy and truly a detriment to a free market that steals wealth every day from Main Street to put it into the hands of these Wall Street middlemen. So I swear, if DTCC makes their systems open source, I will file for Chapter 11. But it will not happen. There is so much at stake, and they perpetuate all of it. They are the source of all of it. And indeed, without them, the whole system crumbles.
Right. No, I don't think we reasonably need to expect that that they're going to embrace outside input. Even though, and this is the crazy part, right? They have such an established monopoly and so much legal protection. You know, they are the linchpin. And it's almost as if, and let me know if you disagree, but they probably could, you know, they could easily do that and not operate at cost, you know, still charge a transparent, you know, additional fee or whatever to all of their members, just as they do now. I mean, you can research fee data. And they could absolutely, you know, embrace a distributed, you know, improvement metric like that. But I think, as you say, they're unlikely to do so because there's an incredible amount of control had here. And if you don't need to give that up, like what examples do we have in meaningful history at this scale of them giving up that kind of control? It just doesn't happen. And so it needs to be wrestled away or outcompeted in some other fashion. You know, you quipped about a Chapter 11. I don't think that we need to be worrying about that. So let's see. I mean, as we start looking through this document here, one thing that I was really curious to get your take on, John, you know, they have this this graphic which lays out their idea, and it's interesting. Like, this graphic has no footnotes, no further explanation, but it's essentially this this circle graph where they're indicating how this Launchpad ecosystem is going to work. Because remember, they attested earlier on in this document that a successful digital ecosystem is going to require a diverse network of participants. Which, sure, of course. I mean, not only is that something that the digital asset enthusiasts would want to hear, but it's recognition of the way the legal structure operates as it is today. You have brokers, you have transfer agents, you have issuers, and of course you have the people that are interested in participating in the market. But this puts the DTCC, you know, at the front and center naturally, and looks to break down very low on the chain each of these different participants who might be trading around the tokenized assets. So I was curious, you know, what do you make of this sort of vague launchpad graphic?
I've had this up since we started. It's certainly the centerpiece of all of this. In that 2006 SRO activity, it was introducing a lot of new requirements for transfer agents, which Trimbath has said in the past, transfer agents directly compete with the business of the DTCC because they let you trade and settle directly with other investors, right? There's no intermediary. And indeed, as we see this circle, and it's not even the DTC's front and center. I'm completely with you on that. They are at the top of everything. And that is how they've always wanted things. In this 2006 action, which they got through, they effectively forced a third of transfer agents out of business within a couple of years. And since then, it has been drastic consolidation in that industry because they put a bar for operating to service a public company that uses any DTC services that is miles high. You need millions in insurance coverage. And indeed, you have to actually sign an agreement with your direct competitor as a transfer agent. You have to sign an agreement with DTCC that gives them sweeping authority to control your bookkeeping and record systems interacting with their central databases, which are, I can't emphasize enough how outdated these agreements are. You type static IP addresses into a PDF and they use that to configure a COBOL server. It is unbelievably antiquated.
Yeah, I got chills. That doesn't sound great.
And then you sign the IP addresses and they use that for it.
Oh, man. Well, hey, if it ain't broke, I guess that's what they're thinking, huh?
It's not even if it ain't broke. You have to have $50 million of insurance when it goes wrong. And of course, you have to pay the banks for a blanket bond because you're going to have to pay for all these errors when there's hacking, which happens all the time on the Medallion side.
Unbelievable. And you know, they're looking at modernizing. You know, I doubt that they're still going to have those same... Well, who knows, right? I would hope, for their own sakes, that they update some of these agreement templates. You know, should they integrate a lot of this DLT into the whole streamlined partnerships that they're talking about developing here? But I suppose we will never know if that's true or not, because none of this stuff is publicly reviewable.
No, it's not reviewable. This is about control, if you ask me. This is about control over entire industry to perpetuate the lies that they have enabled through the nakeds. And indeed, if you look at this image, you can see that they, and if you read, you know, if you understand, you know, all this, everything about this report, it says, we want to control and build the exact infrastructure that everyone uses. We want to dictate exactly what everything runs on. And indeed, it is our servers that everyone will interact with. And you have to, you know, you can put your input in however much you want, but we're going to be the ones doing all of this. And that is not how an industry is efficient. That is not how capitalism is supposed to work. We're supposed to have competition. We are supposed to have independence. And indeed, we are not supposed to have monopolistic consolidation in the hands of some individuals that might not represent the actual users of these services. And so when I see this gated walled circle where everybody is confined and constricted to the limited rules defined by these select few executives at the DTCC. And indeed, every aspect of the industry today is focal on integrating with the arbitrary procedures that they define only to those that they want to. I have communicated in the server that there's a DTCC learning portal where you can understand some of their services. And we have Bob on, who has read hundreds, if not thousands of pages of this educational material that they provide to industry participants to understand how their central databases work, which are, I mean, you read through them and you can see just how, oh my gosh, I'm sure I'd love to have hear his comments on it if he's available to, if they're available to chat. And I was not allowed access to that resource from day one. And indeed, from day one of trying to integrate block transfer into DTCC and understand all these agreements and try to comply with every little nook and cranny without signing anything binding on the syndicate. From day one, it was gatekeeping. It was, you can't use our services because XYZ. And indeed, there was a field on form TA1 where you have a DTC member number. And I talked with commission staff about this, and they said it's not required. And indeed, they actually don't really care if you have it or not. But I thought it would be a good idea just to do it, just to, you know, check all my boxes. And it took me months to get this number from DTC. I had to fill out forms. I had to get them assigned, and I had to change fundamentally the infrastructure that I was using for communication just to comply with their arbitrary non-public centralized standards for how I can contract the DTCs. It's ridiculous. This is about control, and they have all of it for every single name that we see in this chart. And they shouldn't. They do not. There's no part of the Securities Exchange Act that says DTCC controls the entire industry. And indeed, there's no part of any congressional statement that says DTCC controls the entire industry. And there's only a few limited instances where the SEC says DTCC controls the whole industry, like at the end of last year. And that's just not right. And that's unchecked by the Supreme Court in every sense of the word. And ideally, we talked about Alpine. It should challenge some of these things. And man, if we can invoke change there, then maybe we can finally have real innovation and not a system where me as a material participant cannot access the educational materials. And indeed, that is the mantra for every single one of these names on this chart. It is so challenging to find public information to understand exactly how these businesses work, except for, of course, the ones in the middle, like the blockchain networks and the Web3 tools and the things that they put in there for semantics to make things look good. But aside from that, you can see absolutely nothing that's happening here. And that's because if you could really understand every little nook and cranny of the businesses labeled here, then you could understand, at least from my perspective, very clearly that it's a little bit like a house of cards and something that can very trivially be streamlined and automated by actual blockchain technology. That, you know, I appreciate that, you know, you can have blockchain as a private store of data that's a little bit less efficient than like a traditional central database, but you get a little bit more auditability if you don't know how to use like basic logging functions. But a real blockchain that actually decentralizes power, that's the only thing in this entire chart. And they haven't even bothered to specify what they're going to use because, of course, they don't have the expertise. Well, you know, they do have the expertise. Daniel knows exactly what the best system is because he built on it for the first 4 years of Securrency. But of course, that becomes nothing, and that gets thrown by the wayside when it is acquired by someone who is basically has him there for posterity. And you can kind of tell that he's under strict NDAs with the conversations, the very limited interactions, and just not a source in any way of innovation. Indeed, it is using that control, given their omnipowerful position, to squander very directly in this 2006 change any competition that might emerge in their particular industry.
Yeah, I mean, you're well said there. It's unfortunate but expected that they don't provide some more detail about. I mean, it's great that they've reached the same conclusion. I think that just about anyone who understands both the legacy financial system and distributed ledger technology would also have reached in years past, which is that there are myriad efficiencies to be realized by introducing this kind of system. But not just inefficiencies, you know, depending on how it's implemented. Of course, huge advancements in transparency and in access and in just, you know, egalitarian kind of market dynamics for participants of different types of backgrounds. And there's unfortunately none of that yet clearly coming out from the DTCC's new digital assets division that Nadine is heading up. And so we'll see. I mean, maybe I think we'll certainly be keeping an eye on this and highlighting, you know, future things, future releases, future projects, whatever happens next for their Launchpad program and organization. We'll certainly be highlighting it here, not because we necessarily expect for it to align with our own projects and our own priorities, but because this right here is it's not just the market leader. It's the monopolistic presence for securities, custody, and settlement in the U.S. markets, which are, of course, the largest worldwide markets. And if a standard is set here, this is a standard for the world to follow, just as markets the world over already were viewing the U.S. markets as a standard when they set up their own native central securities depositories in recent decades. John, what else stood out to you from this paper?
Yeah, with you there, Chais. I mean, really the biggest question for me is, you know, they tout that they're building this open ecosystem. And the big quandary for me is, you know, if you mean the development of a proprietary system that very secretly puts everything in your own hands, and in terms of egalitarianism, which I think is something so key to the development of a true free market, a place where everyone can play by these same rules, and indeed Kenny doesn't get some special exemption that allows for market manipulation, indeed market manipulation through naked shorting, which was a material factor in the brokerages businesses that Madoff endeavored in, that is just, it's not a fair system. And indeed, you look at some of Daniel's original ethos, and I absolutely love it. In the first 4 years of his career, really building this out from scratch and trying to actually innovate before he was acquired and squandered, in my view, by this, I mean, they are the market. It's just this monopoly, this has become the entire market. You know, he talks so passionately about giving these investments to the billions of people on this planet presently too low income and such. You know, it's not viewed as worth enough for Wall Street to serve them. And indeed, Wall Street has done everything possible to alienate these lower echelons of our society. And if we can finally give them the opportunity to invest on the same terms, at the same infrastructure, and with the same possibilities available today to a select few middlemen, then I think it could fundamentally transform how we all look at investing, because nowadays it is something so foreign to so many, because the entire system from the systemic roots has been built to keep things secret, to keep everything proprietary, so that the few that actually want to go and learn it and really put decades of work into understanding how it all works can go and then work on Wall Street to extract that value. My best friend growing up in middle school, his brother went to NYU and started working at a hedge fund there. That, I mean, all they're doing is latency arbitrage. It's like every single fund you talk to, it's latency arbitrage, or what you're doing is there's that, and then of course there's the naked shorting, and then there's the market making. It's just about making money while taking no risk, which I have no problem with if you're actually really analyzing the markets like some of the best hedge funds and the best investors in the world do on a daily basis with material efforts. But when you're doing it on the basis of I can get to this particular central exchange before you can, using this fiber optic line that I spent billions on to get to Chicago, and you can't, I mean, that is not an egalitarian system. And indeed, if we consider the case of an investor in Africa and we believe for a fraction of a second that they're going to get best execution on an order in New York, man, Kenny was putting up satellites in his Harvard dorm so that he could get signals faster than anyone else. It's just not going to happen. These guys have hundreds, thousands of pages of research on how to use microwaves and RF transmitters to get signals back and forth before other people can. And I wholeheartedly see that the only way to solve this fundamental challenge that you can spend more money today, you can spend more money than anybody else, and you can get a special co-located private server line to the New York Stock Exchange. The only way to solve that is for everyone to operate on an equal footing in the same system where the transactions are in a blockchain with blocks. So you have to get that transaction in a block. And then obviously when it's in a block, everybody competes at a set period of time every now, you know, every new block. It's a new Dutch, you know, it's a new, everyone's in the same field. And once you do that, now it's not arbitraging. It's actually just putting what you want to pay for things, because you know that when you submit that to the network, it has a real chance of getting filled. You can't spoof anymore. You can't cancel it one microsecond before it gets filled and then put it in and then move it to another exchange, which is so common in these HFT strategies. And indeed, it removes very materially the riskless attributes present in the current system that let these Wall Street firms extract these spreads from Main Street transactions. And it actually forces the liquidity that they say is there to be there, because we've seen time and time again these flash crashes where the algorithms race to steal away the money in ways that they think is going to extract that rent from Wall Street. And indeed, we've seen so often these flash crashes where the liquidity disappears in the blink of an eye because everything moves so, so quickly. And I've read study after study after study that shows so clearly from high-ranking academic institutions that when you block these trades together and you do it in a set repetitive, you know, every 5 or 6 seconds, all of our bids and asks are going to meet. It's just a better market, Chives. It's a market where we're not spamming things just to cancel them, to confuse people on what we think price action is going to be. It's a market where we don't, you know, these past few days, we've seen very strange, gigantic spikes in the price of a certain security in the last few minutes of the close of the day. It's a market where, indeed, the only way it seems for a number of trades to actually profit is to have gigantic server and trading code infrastructure in place to respond in fractions of a second, which any human could never do. And indeed, it's a market built for these institutions that desire so wholeheartedly to profit from these machines, instead of one driven by actual investors contributing their money to a joint venture because they believe that that issuer will succeed and they want to align their values with it. And, you know, it's so blasphemous for me to think that we can have a quote unquote long-term stock exchange that follows this same model where you have such high speed on the trading itself.
Yeah, and I think to really countersink the nail that you're describing there, John, it gets back to this idea of the, you know, a public or private blockchain. Because, you know, everything you're describing, you're right. But what is necessary is that those blocks can be reviewed by everyone, that everyone has equal and immediate access to the blocks as they are mined, and can review what has happened, and can calculate their next actions from there. And, you know, has that equal opportunity to utilize whatever knowledge they have and consider their next moves. And conversely, right, and again, this is not covered in their white paper regarding, you know, what sort of style of blockchain they'd look to implement. But if it's one where the access to review those blocks is limited to, let's say, DTCC members, then what you actually have is a further consolidation, a further monopolization of the access to this information. Either way, gone are the, you know, HFT, you know, fiber optic cables tracing to Chicago. But what you have instead is a more streamlined, more monopolized immediate access to that information only for the members which are deemed to have earned that access. And that sounds pretty bad.
It's not egalitarian in any sense of the word. And I will just one small addition there is that anyone can submit box. You know, that's a material part that you can participate in the network's consensus layer, and as a counterpoint to as you've identified this unacceptable monopolization.
Yeah, I mean, I guess from my perspective, we don't know what the exact structure would be. As far as, you know, I mean, there may be a limited ability. Maybe there are only certain nodes which collate submissions, which then are, you know, yada, yada, yada. I mean, there's lots of different ways it could be built, right? But I don't want to get into the weeds. The point being is we just don't know, and we are unlikely to know for quite some time, if ever, what they are building in this vein.
Well, the only way for us to learn in the present regulation regime is for there to be some systematic failure. And I just don't think that's an acceptable solution to the oversight challenges.
No, I don't think so. And the problem there, it's like, you know, the house is burning down. All the incriminating records are in the file cabinet, which is in the house that's burning down. Not ideal. Not ideal for us. Yeah, so it's definitely a fascinating time to be involved in this space, to be interested in this technology, and in the legacy infrastructure, and of course in possible improvements, as you've eloquently laid out. And always, I love listening to you talk about that. I know our listeners do as well. I think we've certainly covered some highlights here about the implications and content. I guess I'm curious, John, if there's anything else you wanted to touch on. I think for me, we could talk a bit about, you know, how they talked about the the smart contracting and relationship between the new clearing members and margin calls, and kind of how they view efficiencies there. But probably that stuff is going to be pretty intuitive for folks familiar with the technology already. What did you think when they got into detail about that, kind of in the later pages, kind of like six through nine or whatever?
Yeah, this for me gets back to that central custody argument. In particular, there was a quote where it says, especially in the listed derivatives market, the unique and complex structure of omnibus accounts presents challenges for ecosystem design. And then they go on to describe how they look at different omnibus accounts, and specifically the buy and the sell side clearing members. And they say that that remains hidden from the CCP. And this is a direct quote. This results in a complex market structure with a hierarchy exceeding three layers. It results as in a transitive verb. And I just a more complex structure on an already complex part of this wholly complex, encompassing system that is Wall Street. You're adding more and more and more complexities. And it gets me back to this axiom that, you know, if you could make a system simpler, it might take more work, but of course that's going to be more efficient. But if we can make it more complex, you got to remember DTCC is a cost plus basis. And indeed, they're also sideways, you know, parallelly, in my view, in the business of obfuscating what's actually happening on Wall Street. And so if you increase the complexity, it increases the cost. So the firm itself rakes in more profits that can distribute it to its members. And indeed, it furthers the challenges that regulators will have when they come into this system and try to figure out exactly what's going on. Because if you make it so you need a PhD to understand what's happening here, and you need to spend 70 hours looking through code just to understand even how it works, then of course that's going to drastically slow down a large amount of commissional staff in uncovering, you know, again, what I think we all see here as this house of cards with the material inadequacies that they have showcased so clearly with the failures, and of course with the restricting the buy button. What do you think on that, Chives? Did you see that part in particular, or was there any other parts that stood out to you?
Yes, well, it's funny, you know, that exact quote that you'd read off, indicating, you know, the increasing complexity and multi-layered nature of the omnibus accounts stood out to me as well. It was on my list as well. And, for those, I guess, just to catch up, you know, these omnibus accounts, something that's often used, by a custodian, you know, essentially, it's like a pool of assets where, let's say you and I are invested in the same thing, and we're invested in the same, you know, in the same thing with the same custodian. You know, that custodian, for the ease of tracking, can then, you know, kind of hold all of those, whatever that item is, hold it all in one large pool, which, you know, on the top of it has the custodian's name, and then they're tracking internally whatever the distribution is of that asset in that omnibus account to its to their clients, to the individuals that are utilizing their system for asset management. And I mean, so from the jump, right? I mean, that I don't like those. I prefer my custody to be my own. And anytime you're involving yourself in one of these scenarios, you know, you're signing over the ability, you know, like asset managers, you know, it's there in the name, you know, but they're able then to, if they wanted to, say, draw against the equity represented by that omnibus for some reason, or utilize it in some way. I mean, they're going to have the freedom to do so in many cases. And it also separates you from the asset itself for purposes of, if it's a stock, for example, for purposes of democracy.
Chimes it cut out there again. I will take a moment to again shout out Bob. I know did it on X specifically, but in the context of everything that's going on here, I look in this report at page 6. They have, this is exactly what Chai's was talking about. I think he's getting back up here as a speaker. They have this diagram with 15 lines, 5 segmented entities, and at least 3 other account differentiations, and it's just unbelievable how complex they try to make these things. And the only way, it's kind of like a brute force hashing algorithm. You sort of just have to keep going at it over and over and over again to demystify it, because they hide it in the complexity. And so just, again, some stellar work on your end there. And also, I believe Altair has helped with putting all that in one place, which was really useful so that we could all work on it. Just really stellar work there.
Hey, I'm back. Not sure what happened there. Just some technical difficulties with X, I guess. Thank you, John, for filling the space, and I'll fix this with the magic of editing.
Yeah, right.
I guess I must have cut out before. Where did I cut out?
You cut out. You were just starting to go into some of your thoughts on the direct quote. You were cut out for about 45 seconds.
Dang. Well. I'll try to kind of revisit the.
I'm sure it's worth it.
Well, I'm not sure how far along I got, but essentially the part of that quote that kind of stood out to me. I think I went into preamble first, and then I talked at the end just about how it was interesting to me that they were so concerned about maintaining that part of the legacy custodial infrastructure when it would be easy for, you know, if you're transitioning to a blockchain system, you don't need necessarily to, you don't need to maintain that. It does introduce a lot of complexity. And you could do things like color or otherwise label individual tokens, you know, on-chain with in metadata. And so it was surprising to me that they were so worried about how the custodial infrastructure that is often used in omnibus accounts and others, might impact the space. I mean, it just seemed to me like, and maybe I'm misunderstanding how that would be an easy solution, but essentially those are my thoughts. I if I only cut off for 45 seconds, then the other stuff probably got heard.
Yeah, I made an aside about the complexity of that image on page 6. And I will, just for clarity, it was LFR that has been instrumental in bringing some of those documents over. Great work on everyone's side, but just wanted to make sure I gave that shout out properly. My bad there.
Yeah, absolutely. Those DTCC documents have been a helpful resource, and he was definitely instrumental in gathering those and providing those. So thank you for shouting that out. And certainly anyone who's interested in more of the backend framework and context that they're approaching some of this technology with, you know, that could be a great place to start, although there's certainly a lot of information covered there. And there's been a great collation effort undergone by the community. So perfect. Yeah, John, did you have any further thoughts on kind of that, the omnibus complications and, what do you think their motivation is for shouting that out as a problem? Like, am I underestimating the complexity of the issue in context of possible solutions represented by chain technologies?
No, I mean, the blockchain makes this so simple. Okay, if you put this all through a public blockchain that has a DEX, it's ungodly simple. There isn't all this omnibus consolidation and complexity. And indeed, there's a quote in there about how you couldn't really, you know, it was a conundrum of having to calculate the margin calls. And indeed, if you look, the margin calls between the clearing members, between the in this case, it's the Wall Street of Japan, and indeed the margin calls between the CSD, I'm sorry, the CCP, it means same thing, but I like CCP. These are inexplicably complicated systems built for the purpose of ensuring that only a select few middlemen can make money on interest. And indeed, we all are quite familiar with how much of their mammoth profits come from the lending of securities. And to think that they will go through all this complexity just to make sure that you can't see what's happening on the lending side. And indeed, to ensure that the margin calls can be compartmentalized and fractionalized between individual members who can then call on other select few intermediaries to come in and give them new collateral. It's just mind-boggling because behind all of it, for me at least, you can see so clearly the argument of counterfeiting stock 2.0 in that there is a material sort of central reliance on everybody being properly coordinated based on a single intermediary as the director, so to speak, of this orchestration. And indeed, as we've seen in every other instance in history, if you look at, you know, central intermediaries, that just doesn't seem to be a sustainable approach to building long-standing public infrastructure.
Well, that reminds me of the old adage, John, that, you know, every fiat currency fails eventually. Yeah, I mean, it's everything is sustainable until it's not, right? And to make more of a guess at timelines than that is pretty difficult. But certainly, I mean, as to now, that seems to be the case. But I don't know. I mean, they've got an absolute monopoly here, as you've said, you know, not only just in terms of the traditional sense, but in a legally backed sense as well. And we are at the whim. You know, it's the DTCC's wild ride. So I think we've covered some great ground here. And that was the lot of the key highlights that I wanted to pull up. I'm glad you kind of covered the margin call aspects as well, which, you know, although fascinating to read about, you're absolutely right that, I mean, these solutions, you know, it's not like it's they're reinventing the wheel here. You know, yes, it's more efficient, but there are the same risks as ever. And, you know, so for that reason, you know, if you're a legacy market enthusiast, then this is all great news. If you're a blockchain enthusiast, then they've really undershot the potential of what could happen in terms of a, you know, revolution and advances in market dynamics.
With you there, Chives.
Yeah, well, great. We do have some live listeners. If anyone has any questions, you know, I think it's about time where we could certainly invite any folks up. If there's anything you want to talk about from the white paper here on digital assets from the DTCC. And, you know, while we give folks a few moments to decide if they want to come up, John, anything else on your mind?
Well, a lot of these questions, and this is why I think I've communicated this on the Discord, certainly, and I feel like we talked about it a few months ago, but, you know, there was a point in mid to late 2023 when I made, you know, I've been doing all this work for the Cint, for block transfer for years and years and years in this one main repository on GitHub. And it was public with no license. I didn't really understand the licensing implications and such back then, which are more explicitly spelled out in wooten.link/GNU, GNU. But I made it private because I sort of started to realize that the potential here really does sort of change how these markets function at their core. If we can really effectuate a world where all the risk isn't centralized in a select few middlemen, and specifically an intermediary, which is notoriously private. If you read some of their operating manuals from the 80s, it's kind of crazy how secretive everything is, and the way that they have this central coordinating effort that is entirely out of the public eye, which for something that affects practically every, I mean, more and more Americans are investing as they should be, because it is really the most straightforward path nowadays to join the elites of the world and to have a real future. So, you can have savings and you can actually have a retirement so that you aren't stuck in their system till the day you die. And to think that every aspect of that touches the ordinary American, and indeed any investor in our most performant securities, given our nation, our great nation's global presence in the market for capital, to think that that all lies on a couple of guys in an office. You know, we don't even know who controls the CD partnership. And indeed, this information is all kept in the hands of a select few. And the only way to get explicit answers in a very large number of cases, and specifically in David Webb's case with the inquiry through the New York Fed about the custody structure, I mean, you have to organize an entire government coalition of lawyers to go and ask the hard questions to these guys to get a real answer. I mean, you think getting a response from an IR agent or a legacy transfer agent is tough. Try getting a response from DTCC, because I've tried so damn much to reach out and communicate and understand, and it's just stonewall. I cannot believe that is the system our securities market should get built upon, the foundation of our wealth as a society, because the vast bulk of the wealth is in securities. And indeed, if we think about these concepts of an open, transparent, and accountable government, I believe wholeheartedly that they apply similarly to organizations, especially self-regulating organizations, and even further, self-regulating organizations which are dictated as one of a select few systemically important financial institutions for our great nation. And to think that every axiom of efficiency, of transparency, and crucially of honesty, a process that is honest, that says to investors, you can trade until one day you can't, due by and large to the central policies of the DTCC, it is beyond anything I could ever have thought of when I started investing. When I started investing in the stock market 7-8 years ago, I thought I was following the best system to build my own future and to control my destiny, to acquire financial freedom. And just what I've learned about these select few middlemen over the years, it is unbelievable that this has been allowed to happen. And I am deathly afraid that if we don't provide regulators a solution in the very immediate future, that there are some world-shattering risks that could come to light in these central intermediaries.
Yeah, I am right there with you, John. You never expect the rabbit hole to go quite so deep.
I mean, come on.
But here we are, at the tail, on the other side of 5 decades of, encouraged centralization and monopolization of the, U.S. market landscape, with efficiency in mind, with access to liquidity in mind, there's a clear trail of, regulatory and legal language that has encouraged and helped along this development. So as far as how it happened, it happened slowly. It wasn't exactly all at once, but I completely agree with you that there is absolutely a need, if not last year, if not 10 years ago, if not yesterday, then, you know, today, tomorrow, next year, to continue building towards, not only increasing the floor of understanding when it comes to these dynamics and how things actually operate under the hood, but more precisely, you know, introducing potential alternatives and encouraging a fervor and desire for those potential alternatives, because they are technologically possible in a way that is clearly demonstrable already. It just takes understanding the context and the available technology in order to envision what that alternative structure could look like. And then, you know, from there is the next giant step towards actual implementation and meaningful competition with these gigantic established legacy infrastructures. So, you know, it looks to me like we gave a few minutes here and some closing ideas. Folks, I don't think had any further questions, so I think we can probably call it there. John, was a great discussion, and again, I encourage folks to read through these documents and with a critical eye, remembering where they're coming from and where they're going. All sound good, John. Thanks so much again for coming on and sharing your expertise and thoughts on some of this new documentation.
Yeah, of course, Chives. Love the idea, looking at it in the context of their position and everything. It reminds me of the cigarette companies that fund the research on smoking. It's like, come on.
Oh, sure. Or ExxonMobil with climate change, right? Yeah. Also 50 years ago.
Yeah.
It's no different. All right. Well, thanks so much, everybody. We'll look forward to speaking to you again next week. And, you know, we'll call it there. Goodbye.